It's time for This Week in WordPress, episode number 335, entitled Low Cost, Low Performing. It was recorded on Monday, the 26th of May, 2025. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and today I'm joined by Peter Neri. I'm also joined by Tammy Lister and Tim Nash. It's a WordPress podcast, so we actually spend quite a lot of time not talking about WordPress this week. But nevertheless, there is quite a bit of WordPress buried in there as well. So we start the conversation off talking about rebuilding trust amongst the WordPress community. And the executive director of the WordPress project, Mary Hubbard, has a few things to say about that. We also talk about the similarities and differences between the Drupal project and the WordPress project, and whether or not we have something to learn from one another. And then we spend a really long time talking about AI and the fact that maybe AI is going to consume the WordPress plugin repository. The submissions are really up, and maybe that's as a result of AI creation of plugins, and whether or not that landscape can cope with this uptick in plugin submissions. And then we talk about a bunch of blocks which have been released and a whole load of other stuff. And it's all coming up next on This Week in WordPress. This episode of the WP Builds podcast is brought to you by GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. And by Bluehost. Redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And by OmniSend. Do you sell your stuff online? Then meet OmniSend. Yes, that OmniSend. The email and SMS tool that helps you make 73 bucks for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of rollercoaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try OmniSend today at omnisend.com. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world. This Week in WordPress, episode number 335. It's a bank holiday in the UK. Me, Tammy and Tim, what the heck? What are we doing? We're here on a day when the entire country is out at the beach or having a nice time off, but we're here talking about WordPress. I appreciate that. I have to say commiserations, I suppose. That's not the right word, but best wishes to Michelle Frechette. She should have been joining us, but is sadly not feeling particularly well. And so I'm very, very grateful to Tim for stepping in at literally the 11th hour. It probably was about 11 o'clock or something like that, roughly. So thank you for that. But yeah, get well soon, Michelle. I hope that whatever it is that's going on there, I hope that you're over it soon enough. So we're here to talk about WordPress. You can see I've got a panel of guests with us. Let's go around the houses and introduce everybody. Let's start with Tammy. How are you doing, Tammy?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. Tammy Lister. Tammy is a product engineer who focuses on the intersection of design, development, and open source. She helps products at all stages of their journey. She is also a co-founder of Gildenberg, where she offers a full range of products and services to consult. Product services and consultancy. You can learn more about what she's up to and thinking at Binate Thoughts. Have I pronounced that right? Binatethoughts.com. Mm-hmm. So it's Binate thoughts.com, along with finding out how you can sponsor her contributions. Just tell us a little bit more about that. Are you in the are you in the market at the moment for being sponsored for contributions?
I'm contributing on Core, and I'm looking particularly for sponsorship every month. I write about what I'm doing in Core, so there'll be monthly posts, and you can see a team. So he's being sponsored me a little bit, so people will sponsor me a little bit or it's a large amount, and it helps from triage all the way through, and I share what I've been doing in Core.
Well, thank you very much. I don't know if it's the same for Tim and Peacher, but is Tammy's audio a bit kind of peculiar? Yeah. I wonder if you've got like a crisp kind of thing switched on or something, or maybe just draw the mic a little bit closer. It sounds
that
like
better?
Just try saying a few more things.
Hello.
Yeah, that, I think that's better. I think there's something going on with the, like, trying to fade out background noise or something like that. Anyway, okay. Let me give you that URL again. I think we captured what you were trying to say, but it's binatethoughts.com if you want to sponsor Tammy's contributions. That would be lovely. We're also joined by Peacher Neri, who's, look at those glasses. What about those?
I know.
How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm very happy to be here with all these friends. Thank you very much, Nathan, for having me and having us.
You're very welcome. Peacher Neri is a UX and accessibility design consultant and designer. She's also an educator, coach, and workshop leader. She speaks at conferences globally on UX and accessible design. Peacher's current main focus is on balancing creativity and accessibility without sacrificing either, and on helping businesses and agencies become accessible and therefore more profitable. Thank you for joining us. Any URLs you want to drop? Anything that's going on in the near future that you want to quickly promote?
Yes. Michelle and I, hello, Michelle, get better soon. All the best. As Nathan said, from the Thursday after WordCamp Europe, which is Thursday, the 12th of June at 6 p.m. Central European summertime, we are going to broadcast a limited podcast series, 10 episodes on accessibility. Each episode will start from HTML because that's the basics of it. And we have a time, we have a topic, and we have a place, which will be the post status YouTube channel.
Look at that.
Well done. So I know.
I'm so good at the copy and paste.
You are fantastic.
Unfortunately, I'm not so good at making it so that it doesn't hide your head. So there's not. And Tammy.
I'm leaning over like this. Thank you, Cammy, for the glasses are. I know. I am quite proud of them.
So for those of you who can see, Thursday, 6 p.m. Central European time. I think that's what that stands for.
For 9 a.m. Thursday.
Yeah, okay. So Thursday, 6 p.m. at the various times that you can see that. And you've got to be a part of the post-status YouTube. Oh, no, post-status YouTube channel, I guess, is open to the public. It's not a post-status.
No, it's a YouTube channel. It's completely open. Yeah.
And you're joining with Michelle, and it looks like you've got 10 episodes. I'll take it off, and then you don't crane your neck. 10 episodes about podcast.
Accessibility.
Apologies. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Very much. Great.
Thank you, Nathan.
Very welcome. Yeah. I'll put that into the bits and pieces for tomorrow as well, out the newsletter. As I said, Tim Nash joined us at the 11th hour. However, he did manage to throw a biography together, which,
already looking forward to it.
He's made me sing. Come on. He's made me sing in the past. It's a variety of different humiliations. This is not humiliating at all, though. This is great. Tim Nash. Tim is not the executive director at Post Status. He is not the podcast barista at WP Coffee Talk. He didn't co-found Underrepresented in Tech or create WP Speakers. He is not the creator of WP Career Pages, but Michelle Frechette did. And hopefully she's wrestling up and getting well soon. You can learn more about Michelle at Meet Michelle online. And you can learn more about Tim at timnash.co.uk. I think that's lovely. I think that was a really novel, interesting way of getting the message out there. That's great. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it. Anything you want to plug?
No.
You sure? I know you've got a thing. Oh, okay.
No.
Okay, very good. Go
on to Michelle's website.
Okay, go to Meet Michelle online and timnash.co.uk. Try that as well whilst you're there. Have we got any comments coming in? We sometimes do. Here we go. So we've got Ryan joining us from Influence WP. Hello from rainy Charlotte, North Carolina, USA. We've got Tim Nash joining us. The days of sunshine are over. No kidding. It's just bleak and miserable. Back to the UK weather. That's how it goes. Cammy's joining us, I'm guessing, in Seattle. Yeah, it's raining. This is great. We're all combined in our love of the rain. Loving the glasses, she says. Oh, is that what you were referring to earlier? Lawrence joining us from Australia, I'm guessing, saying hello. And bravo, Tim. Oh, that's nice. That was a nice little summation of that. Okay, if you've got anything that you want to put into the captions, please feel free to do that. The easiest way to do it, depending on where you're watching this, it just occurred to me, I've never done this before, and it probably was a good thing to do. The only way that we can get comments from you is if you go to the YouTube channel, or we embed the YouTube comments on our page over at wpbuilds.com/live. So if you happen to be watching this on X or LinkedIn or Facebook or any of those other things, any comments that you type just go into the void. It's like dev null for comments. Thank you. Look at this. Okay, I'll take it off. So go to Now you know you just both look like that. If you go to wpbuilds.com/live, that's going to be the best place to do it. If you are not a fan of, you know, being logged into a Google account for those comments, there's a little button at the top of the actual the video player. And if you click on that button, I think it says live chat, then you don't need to be logged into anything. It just consumes the comments and puts them straight into our thing here. So feel free to do that. wpbuilds.com/live if you want to share it. Right. Let's get stuck into it. The usual bits of self-promotion. This is us, wpbuilds.com. If you want to keep in touch with all that we're doing, then put your email address into here and click subscribe. There is something in the water this week. I don't know if it's a spam bot, but this form has been absolutely hammered this week. And I'm not convinced it's not nefarious. Tim's looking around like, it's not me, Governor. But you know, normally you get this sort of cadence on any form and it's just like you get a predictable amount of traffic. Well, it's not been normal this week, so I suspect something perhaps needs to be looked at.
But you said last week you wanted more.
Did you write a script?
To do with me.
Okay, yeah. I did want more, but then actually it happened, so that's kind of curious. Go there, put your email address into there, click subscribe, and then we'll send you two things. We package this up as an audio podcast and send it out tomorrow morning, so you'll get that. And then on Thursday, we do a regular podcast where it's me typically interviewing somebody. Here's what they look like. It's this kind of thing. Last week I was interviewing Zach Hendershot about a product called Maruni, which is kind of interesting. I might talk about that in a minute, actually. But the podcast just sort of stretched back, so you'll get an email about that as well. This guy, Zach, right, he's got this product called Maruni, and it's really an interesting take. You know when you've got this interaction with clients where the client might send you a screenshot of something and you're kind of trying to work out what the heck is it they want. Well, he's got a tool. He's built this tool, Maruni, and you go to this specific URL, this software pops up, which enables you to take a screenshot, and then you sort of draw or write on the screenshot. And then he's got an AI on his end, which tries to work out what the change should be. And then he tries to get the AI to create like a diff with the change already made. And the idea is that you would, as the agency, go in, manually approve it and say, yeah, the AI got that right. They wanted to remove the phone number from there and they want to put it here instead. And the idea is that, you know, you would look at it. It cannot be done without human intervention. But the idea is that you would then look at it. If it's correct, you'd click approve. And if it's not, you'd go back to that normal cycle. And he claims that the success rate is quite high because he said clients quickly learn that, you know, you can't do this, but you can do this. So that's, I just thought that was kind of an interesting tool. So anyway, go and check it out. It's called Miruni, Miruni. Okay, there we go. Right, let's get stuck into the WordPressy stuff. A little while ago at WordCamp US, you know what happened, this whole thing between WP Engine and Automattic. And on the back of that, many people got either excluded from the WordPress Slack or WordPress.org. And I think quite a few of them were not entirely sure what the reasoning behind that was. It kind of happened suddenly and unexpectedly in some cases. And then a month ago or something like that, there was a post which came out from, I think it was on Matt Mullenweg's actual, you know, his personal blog, where he was sort of saying, okay, that's going to start to be all on DOM. And so that process has been happening. And it kind of felt like the first moment where some kind of reconciliation was beginning. Anyway, Ray from the repository has got an article about Mary Hubbard and the sort of in things that she's trying to do to rebuild trust The article is called Mary Hubbard Moves to Rebuild Trust After WordPress.org Banned. And I'll just read a few things. After months of uncertainty surrounding bans on WordPress.org, WordPress Executive Director Mary Hubbard has proposed reforms aimed at restoring trust and improving transparency. And so the next question, of course, is, well, what reforms? And here's a list of what is intended. Introducing a formal appeals process, I guess, so that if you're banned, you've got some mechanism for saying, well, why? And can we review whether that's fair? Expanding conduct guidelines to better cover Slack behavior. I didn't realize actually that there wasn't any guidelines about that, but apparently it's tied to things like use of emojis, which can be, you know, a thing. Rotating moderator roles so that one person isn't always in for a period of time, so that that complaint couldn't be leveled. And the idea is aimed at rebuilding confidence after a wave of abrupt, opaque bans that left many locked out of WordPress and Slack. Now, I hadn't remembered this. She has some experience in this field because apparently she previously was the head of TikTok America's governance and experience. Not entirely sure what that role is, but it does feel like there was significant overlap there. And she said, and I'll quote from Ray's article, she said, quote, It was about restoring trust in the systems we used to moderate and trust in people behind them. There's a few bits and pieces further down where people are saying, look, if we are going to start unbanning people, so for example, Mika Epstein makes the point, she used to be very much involved in the WordPress community and especially on the plugin review team and things like that. Can we make sure essentially that we don't bring everybody back? Because some people were probably banned for what anybody would view to be reasonable reasons. So let's not just undo with a big tidal wave of, okay, everybody's welcome back. Can that be a thing? So a formal appeals process, updated guidelines for Slack, and rotating moderators and enforcers appears to be the knob of that. Right, I've spoken for far too long, but I thought that was important. Any thoughts on that? Over to you guys.
Yeah, we're all going to jump in and say lots of things for you, Nathan.
Please.
No, I will say one thing. I know Ray is a really good journalist and it's really nice to see professional journalism. But because of that, that article as it's written is Mary Hubbard says this. Mary Hubbard's doing it. And one person can't rebuild a community. Well, one person can't rebuild a community. It needs to be the community rebuilding the trust inside of itself. And so I think that is happening. But if we start labeling it as Mary's doing this, Mary's doing this, Mary's doing this, Mary's doing this, and then she just becomes the focal point for when it all breaks down. And we end up in a very similar situation to what we had previously, where people had an awful lot of stuff piled on top of them. And then we're blamed for when everything went wrong. So,
do you know that's
more spreading out of?
That's really curious because I hadn't parsed it that way at all. But now that you say it, that makes perfect sense. It can't be the job of this one individual. What do you think about the idea though of like some things where there's a systemic change, and obviously she probably has more levers to pull than let's say me or you. So, for example, I don't know, setting something up in order to rotate community leads or setting something up to moderate WordPress Slack. I presume she's got a handle on more levers than somebody like me. So maybe there's something in it there. What do you think?
No. I mean, maybe, but maybe. I just feel putting the responsibility on her doesn't seem a fair way to describe it. In one article, that's, and it was more about how the article presents it than it was
okay.
about reality.
Okay. Peacher?
I have a few thoughts. I will limit my output, but just because I was banned for a long time because of an emoji. So, of course, the mention of that.
Is that really?
Yeah. I was one, and I think maybe it wasn't a pleasant one. Maybe it was a vomiting one. Oh. So not very nice, but it was the first time that I ever had any reaction to all that was going on. And the reason for that was because something that I really felt was very wrong to say in the community Slack was said. So I'm not saying that it was nice, but it's when I read the article, what it slightly sounded to me was like, let's blame the emoji and not the reason why people put the emoji. Because okay, maybe right. I was upset. Maybe, and I wasn't the only one. Lots of people were banned. And I do agree, though. I do agree that some emojis are just... But then again, we have to be able to say something, express something without fearing retaliation, because that's not quite a democracy, is it? So, and it seemed altogether excessive to be banned for an emoji.
Yeah.
So that's how I felt about when I heard about that, because it's just the way it's put, it sounds like, oh, people were nasty and they put nasty emojis, which is true, but maybe there was a bit of a point to our reaction. It could be, you know, that we were provoked for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks until I expressed an opinion.
When was this? What year was this? And has it got anything to do with like the recent, like last?
Yeah, yeah, totally. It was after, I can say what, it was a post about basically promoting private hosting services on the Make WordPress Slack.
Okay, so you, yeah. Okay.
I felt was really, 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 really wrong. And I expressed my opinion because I was there and I did it. I'm not saying that it's nice. No, it wasn't nice. But at the same time, that wasn't nice either. So yeah, it's a tough balance.
It's an interesting one as well, because presumably,
let's not blame the emojis.
Presumably somebody has access to what range of emojis are deployable on any Slack instance. I don't actually know if that's true, but I imagine
a guideline?
Oh, okay.
I don't think there was.
You can only edit. Adding in emojis, the core ones are still there.
Oh, okay.
Because so, they're part of your operating
system. So even the incendiary ones are going to be there all the time. Mm. Okay. It's interesting. I definitely saw this article more as a kind of, you know, putting some kind of foot forward and sort of saying, okay, there is something to address here. And I really didn't parse it like you did, Tim. But now that you've said it that way, I understand totally what you mean. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, is my sound okay?
You're perfect. Sorry, okay, cool. Keep going.
So it's really difficult because both sides have feelings when things like that. But all I can say is, as someone that has said a comment and then had emojis, said it in a completely different situation and completely different thing, it kind of sucks to have
it
that.
Does. And I agree.
And if it's horrible, right? But that we get to a position to do that is also not good. So I think when communication lines are broken down, so when we're throwing emojis or when we're in that situation where someone feels that they have to use an emoji as the only way to communicate, that's also not good. So for me, guidelines are great as someone that can't use social media because I get shouted at or can't do certain things sometimes because, you know, it's kind of like hard on people for joining in some conversations in certain areas. There is some really interesting studies done on this. So back in the day when Facebook were doing the emotions, and then they didn't do thumbs up and thumbs down for a very reason. Like thumbs down sucks to get as a human being. That's the best word that I can use to describe it. Like if you have ever said a comment on an issue or something and thought you were completely in the right and been ripped into for one of a less term, it hurts. It really does hurt when you think you are doing the best that you can do as a contributor. So I think we just have to just be a bit kinder to everybody and think about some of the stresses involved in everything and just get never to that escalation point as a community. That would be kind of be nice for everybody. And then everybody would be less stressed and then everybody would be better in it.
One thing from that article that was really good, that I'm really hoping they do, is line about moderators, because has someone who's moderated and had to sit there and call people's heads off and reach the point where I've had to bash some heads as well to make people fall into line, and not in a about, but just for human decency. We're not talking about anything other than you cannot stop attacking humans. The one thing you cannot do is moderate when you are at the center of that.
No.
And it's never a good idea because you are, whether you like it or not, emotionally connected. And you can't separate that. And if you can, there's words for that, and it's not a good set of words, and you need to go for treatment.
Sorry, Tim.
Go on, Pitcher, you go.
Sorry, Tim, I didn't mean to interrupt. Yeah, absolutely agree with all of that. And Tammy, I agree with you, and we had a conversation personally at CloudFest.
Yeah.
And I'm not proud of that emoji, but at the same time, it has to go both ways. And I really, really didn't feel that it did go both ways. Yeah. And only we had no other agency, nothing. All I could do was an emoji. And it's the only thing that I did because I really shied away from it. I didn't say anything on Twitter. You know, I just avoided the whole thing. And then I was like, this is truly unbearable. I cannot stand for this. I feel personally affected by this because I used to be with us, host, you know, whatever. And that's all I did. So I completely agree with you, but it has to go both ways. And at the time, it wasn't going both ways.
I think that's the thing. If we have these guidelines, then people,
yes,
we don't ever get to the point where someone does that because they don't feel they have a route. And I am not a person who likes rules and regulations because generally I'm like, about things like that. I'm Gen X. We don't like rules and regulations, but just by a generation, right? But communities need them. And communities need them for their health. And communities need them for the health of their moderators. Communities need them for the health of themselves. And just for the protection of their contributors and protection of everybody who's in those spaces. We can think that people aren't burnt out. We can think that people are absolutely fine. And they probably are now, but they aren't going to be if we don't have some of these guidelines. So for me, I know we're saying about one person. One person has to make the push of something. One person is like the accelerator or the start of this. And then everybody else has to take it into action. That's kind of how I see it. But yeah, we have to make a start. Agreed. We have to start healing on both sides. Like that's kind of the big one, I think.
I completely agree. Just as long as both sides, the rules apply to everyone though, not just one side. That's, I think, essential.
Yeah,
Tammy. Thank you. Yeah.
I thought this one was the most impactful one for me, this formal appeals process, because obviously if something like that hasn't existed and you do get a chance to, I'll just read you directly from what Ray said. So I'm presuming she's parsing Mary Hobbard correctly. It says, one of the three things, a formal appeals process. Hobbard said that the project currently lacks a consistent way for contributors to appeal bans. She suggested the need for a documented process outlining how appeals are submitted, who reviews them, what timelines apply and what criteria are used. You kind of get the feeling if something like that had been in place, maybe something. No, Tim? No.
It goes back to that, who reviews them.
I guess,
and,
yeah.
And as long as as long as you separate yourself and take a step back and not be involved in the moderation, and then you put your faith and trust in the moderators.
Yeah.
And the moderators come from the community and are humans too.
Yeah.
And ultimately, we just need to remember everybody as a human being.
It's so difficult to actually carry this stuff out in the real world, though, isn't it? Which is why we in the UK, we have this thing called the ombudsman. And so more or less every industry has this thing, this ombudsman, and they're supposed to be detached, but able and enforceable. Well, in many cases, actually not enforceable by law. They're supposed to be able to sort of take a decision and say, we objectively, having looked at it all from both sides, we think this is a bit like a court, if you like. Mm. However, I found to my cost that the ombudsman mostly have no teeth. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. So your point is well made, Tim, about who does the reviewing, because obviously that could just cause more ire. 100% agree, says Taco, with Tim on the Mary Hobbard interview. I wonder which point you were meaning there, Taco. But okay, thank you.
Clearly, he means all of it.
All the entire, everything that came out of Tim's mouth. He agrees 100%. In the future as well, whatever Tim says. There's more info about the process and rotating roles. Elsewhere, do you mean, Patricia, or do you mean within this article? Do you mean?
I think it's the next link that you've got on your slide.
Okay, in which case, I wonder if you mean this one. And I'll just raise it on the screen here. So I've just linked through to the article which Mary wrote. It's quite short, actually, and I won't read it all out, but it is basically the piece which Ray cribbed in order to create her piece. So this is on make.wordpress.org, and the piece is called Restoring Trust While Preserving Safety. And so you can see the ideas on there. Okay, that fomented quite a lot of discussion. Should we knock that one on the head and move on to something else? Yeah, okay. It's kind of tangential, and we've definitely touched this in the past, and this is going to sound a bit self-serving and self-promotional. It really isn't that. Forgive me, but I did a podcast interview with one of the people who actually I didn't know until I read the article by Ray, that this person was banned in one of those, I guess, 32 or whatever it was, people. I did an interview with Chris Reynolds, who works for a company called Pantheon, who I'd heard of but don't really know a lot of. But it was quite a surprise to me that Pantheon do half of their revenue, I'm going to use that word, I don't know if that's the right word, but half of their websites are made with WordPress, and half of the websites that they host are basically made with Drupal. There's a little bit more to it than that. They've got a few little bits and pieces, but he said it's almost nothing. So half Drupal, half WordPress. And so we had this conversation about how the two communities are basically really similar. If you were like an alien landing from outer space and you were just to be plonked into that scenario, I think on many levels you'd find them very, very, very similar. Free open source software, CMS, they've got communities, they've both got events, they've got meetups, they've got camps, blah, blah, blah. But Chris was sort of drawing out some of the differences. And I think a lot of what Chris was relying on was Dries, whose surname I can never get right. But Dries is the person, he's like the Matt Mullenweg, if you like, of Drupal. He's the founder. I don't know if he's a co-founder or just the founder. I think he might be the founder, the singular founder. About the different path that he's taken and about whether or not there's some things that WordPress as a community might learn. So, for example, things like there's this pay-to-play aspect to it. Like, for example, if you wish to be a sponsor at a DrupalCon, think WordCamp, but in Drupal world, then you have to go through some hoops, some kind of Five for the Future style hoops. And unless you go through those and objectively prove that you did a certain set of things, then you can't appear on the Drupal.org website. You can't be in person at the events as a sponsor. And you know, some of that stuff you might disagree with strongly. Some of it you might think, oh, there's legs in that. But there's a whole load of different things that they do slightly differently that I wonder if people in the WordPress community are interested in looking at and seeing. So that's what that podcast was about. And it felt like a good place to drop it in. I don't know if anybody wants to comment on that. If not, I'll just move on.
I think in general, it's really interesting to compare open source communities. When I did a few talks at Typo3 conferences, after which the community lead for Typo3 was coming to work camps and chatting to loads of people to see how the WordPress people were doing it. And it was a really interesting experience. Yeah.
Typo3, that's great. Another CMS, right? I've never used that one, but
it's based on PHP as well. It's very big in Germany and in Northern Europe. And it's so funny to be like to infiltrate their ranks as a WordPress person. It was so funny. The things that they would say were great. And basically, we were the other one. And sort of referred to jokingly. Almost every other talk had a barb for WordPress. And it was fun.
Yeah, I guess WordPress, because of its success, kind of does inevitably set itself up as the...
But nice. Really lovely people.
Yeah.
And but they had a live band for the karaoke, which I have since wished to find at any other conference.
Feature, that's it. We've cracked the nut. What we need is live bands, karaoke. I think that's great. I love that. That's good.
I mean, you really actually got to rock on a stage and it was fabulous. Fun I've ever had.
Oh, I love it.
At a conference.
Go and check it out, though. Go and check out the episode. You know, if you've got any curiosity about that, and also if you do the reading around it, you might be fascinated to see how those different communities do it. One thing that did come out is that WordPress, I think, captured this 43%, got really, really big for something that Drupal never kind of allowed itself to happen, and that is commercial plugins. Drupal has never really had this sort of commercial aspect. So,
right.
But the curious net result of that is that, so let's just use forms as an example. In the WordPress space, how many are there? There must be like 40 form solutions. There are some which are very, very popular, some which, you know, probably have a few hundred, but there's loads of them. And many of them will have a commercial basis. You know, we have Mark Westgard on from WS Form often. That's what he does for a living. In Drupal, they have this thing where somebody many, many years back built a module, they call it. And rather than everybody sort of building rivals to that one, the Drupal philosophy is, well, let's just make that one better. So we'll spend our time, and it's called WebForm, as it happens. Let's make WebForm better, but you can't turn a profit off the back of it. So I don't know how you invest that time. You've got to obviously do it on a much more philanthropic basis. But it does mean that where in Drupal, there's lots of chance for opportunity and profit and all of that. In Drupal, much less so. But I think it may be, I don't know, it combines the community around these single entities, the forms thing and the views thing and the whatever thing, which is kind of an interesting take as well. But yeah, anyway, that came out of it as well. Anything to say before we move on? No. Yeah, no.
I was just going to say that both Typo3 and Drupal are ever so slightly older than WordPress.
Oh.
Both of them have had their little drama moments earlier on, particularly in Drupal's case. They sort of, their current governance structure came from not quite the direct parallels to what we've seen in the WordPress space recently, but very similar sort of, the underlying reasons were very similar. And they completely gutted their governance model to allow that to happen. And this happens in pretty much every open source community at some point that grows to a certain size. It has to decide what it wants to do for itself. You nearly always start off with the person who had the interest, who built the thing, and people come and they grow. And it's like, imagine like things just latching on to the initial person. And this is the project getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And eventually the person right at the start of it is going to get crushed if they don't come up with a way to build out a structure that can support it beyond just them. So,
yeah, that's kind of interesting because, you know, if I go into a shop and I buy, oh, I don't know, like 1,000 Casio calculators, I don't feel in any way like I'm part of Casio or I have any capacity to influence what Casio as a company does, even though I've, you know, given them loads of cash and what have you. But in the open source, the minute you've contributed something, it's kind of yours now, right? It's like there's a bit
but
of
you're it- giving back to the project. You're not giving back by giving money to Casio.
No. It was a terrible analogy. But do you know what I mean? But also, okay, let's say, for example, that I volunteered at a charity shop on the local high street near me. I wouldn't feel that my volunteering there would necessarily give me, okay, now we need to change premises or we need to move things around. I would just see myself as I'm going in and doing my hours or what have you.
I mean, one could argue you shouldn't suggest that the project should move places just because you've committed an issue.
I'm just going to step back from everything I just said.
No, but I think you raised a really good point about the proportion and about the expectations of contribution. There's a whole big
and ownership.
Then, right?
Like you put something in, so it's like it's yours a little bit, isn't it? There's a little bit of you which feels like you've got, not ownership, but you're wedded to it. You want to see it succeed more because you've put time into it and effort into it. And so you feel kind of bound to it and you want it to succeed and you probably get opinionated about it. And yeah, gosh, I mean, goodness knows, roll back the clock 50 years prior to the internet. Who could have even imagined like conversations like this where there's just this disparate community spread out over the entire globe, all trying to get along all the time. I suppose human nature tells us that it's never going to be perfect, but
not to ruin your analogy, Nathan, but I have a friend who worked for a very well-known charity and they started as a volunteer in the bookshop.
Darn it.
And they now run the distribution they actually are in charge of distributing aid.
Oh, okay.
In like Central Africa.
Yeah, no, that is really disabusing me of that.
they were able to gain influence by doing things and building their way up through as a volunteer, and eventually got to a position where there were someone said, "Well, you know what you're doing. Here's some money, off you go and do it."
Nice.
I think everything you've said, well, absolutely right. That's proven with your model.
Yeah. Okay. I take it. Right. Dear listener, rewind and just delete the last 3 minutes of nonsense that I just spoke. However, wait a sec. We have somebody called Fat Jay in the comments. Thank you, Fat Jay. We got bigger things to worry about. He says AI will save us from WordPress. In 3 years, there will be no point in using WordPress. AI will make the CMS out of the box.
We're fine. It's WordPress with a lower P. WordPress with an uppercase P is going to be fine.
Yeah, okay, right. Typo. And that leads us to the typo 3 comment. Oh, did you see what I did there?
So I didn't see that. Yeah. That was really predicate-y.
Yeah, it's okay. Typo 3 has had almost the same drama years ago. Okay, so maybe it's just part of a CMS landscape, if you're in business.
Or just open source in general.
Yeah, open source.
You pick a large open source product, everything from like Apache, HTTP server, all the way through. You pick any of the open source projects. Yeah. If you get to a certain size, if you've only got this core nut of leadership that is just one person, they will feel the weight of like the project. Something has to give.
There's also a comment about like the rules and regulations applying to everyone. Absolutely. I think by them being clear, then we start doing that. And I think everybody got so stressed. I think that's the thing, like to make sure that everybody comes out of this calmly. I think that at least that's my own personal intention. I'm kind of with Tim that this impacts everybody. And to kind of take a step back and then define it so that it applies to everybody fairly.
Right. So this is Taco. Hello, Taco. Yeah. He's often on the show, Taco the Donshot. He says, yes. So he's commenting to Tammy. Yes, we need rules and regulations to ensure safety. And those rules need to apply to everybody, I guess, is emphasized the word everybody in the ecosystem for them to work. And there was something else, again, from Taco. This is going back a moment or two. Rotation already exists. So this is rotation that we were talking about with Mary Hubbard offering that as an option. Team reps are voted in every year. Yeah, I wonder if there's like a cadence difference there. I wonder if it's more like you get a month in that role or 2 months. Or I wonder if it's frequency that was being imagined there. I don't know. So Patricia, I never thought I'd say the words Fat Jay, but there you go. Hello, it's Fat Jay she's replying to. They now have proper governance. I'm guessing that's in response to the typo 3 comment. So I don't know about that. And then Nomad Skateboarding, hello. There are expectations because the efforts aren't usually altruistic on our side. Most of our community we engage with is dollars first. And it's truncated on the screen, but it goes on to say altruism is a ways down the reasoning list, opposing values. And this is, I think, something that maybe some of those other communities don't have to face quite so much, like the Drupal community, for the reasons we said about there being much less of a commercial side to it. Perhaps there is less of a conflict between the money and the altruism.
Sure. But correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I remember, at least typo 3, I really don't know about Drupal. The contributors get paid. There's no free contribution. So there's less stress for that reason as well, as far as I know. And while they didn't pay for me to give the talk, but they paid for everything. I was paid, the trip was paid for, the hotel was paid for, my food was paid for. So it's a little bit different in that sense. As far as it was a few years ago, that's the way it was.
I think on the Drupal side, it's got real broad parallels with WordPress in that there's this overall arching sort of organization. It's called Acquia. So you could basically substitute automatic for Acquia, I think. I haven't dug into the weeds of that. But in terms of the software development, I think most of it is voluntary contributions. I don't think there's a direct route to being paid unless you're seconded by somebody like Acquia or Pantheon or whatever it might be. I don't actually 100% know that, but
I feel like Taco's giving us some indication.
Taco's comment.
Oh, nice. Taco's just like basically here. Thank you, Taco. Drupal's public recognition system is light years ahead of WordPress. Let me just pause that. Drupal's public recognition system. Oh, so like you get some merit for doing a thing. You get recognized for something that you did. The way they measure contributions is just, and again, emphasizing, so much better. Yeah, that was something that came out of the thing. It's like a badge of honor kind of thing. If you do a thing, you get a thing to show that you did that thing. But I don't know, apart from the sponsorship side where you get to appear at Drupal cons and things, I don't know what you would get out the other side. Well, I don't even...
Wouldn't that get you more exposure to get you more contracts? Wouldn't that get you more Tim's nodding. So that's kind of what it does.
That's a really virtuous cycle, isn't it? Is there any downside to that, where if you contribute, you get recognition on the official channel, so you get more work, so you get more recognition?
So Drupal, from my understanding, and certainly historically when I was involved in the area, is obviously aimed, well, it was never aimed at enterprise, but it was picked up by enterprise quite early on. It's safe to say Drupal is not the most user-friendly, even though they've made massive strides in years, but it's historically not been very user-friendly. And so you need quite a lot of knowledge to get started and push through. So that gives them... The people are building these enterprise sites. They tend to they coalesce around several large agencies, and then there is a much more active contractor space, but like a traditional contractor space. So I've worked in places where there were 10, 12 contractors on day rates working on enterprise stuff, and they moved from company to company doing that sort of contracting. Those people in particular, they're absolutely incentivized to contribute back in.
Right.
This is how they get into that route.
Okay.
They're also benefiting from the fact that they're working on Project A, and what you're getting is a more traditional, in some ways, open source. Whereas for us, you have people who we sponsor, like Tammy. You sponsor Tammy to work directly on WordPress core, whereas they're more likely to be submitting issues or tickets or code in for the thing that they are interested in, rather than looking for sponsorship more broadly. Or they've got a project, they found a problem, they go and fix it within that project, and they're moving on. And because they're moving around, they're still picking up all of these bugs and features, and it's all getting fed back, which is a very nice way to do it. And it would be lovely to see that happening more in the WordPress space, but Drupal is geared for that. Drupal truly, they've got a very good way for you to, in terms of like issuing, from reporting a bug through to committing code, through to getting it reviewed. They have a really good process for triaging first bugs. And if you turn up and say, I want to do something and I want to help, it's very easy to have gone from that to have something helping put something into Drupal. WordPress isn't as easy, and getting... If you find a problem that is your little nitpick, it's not about fixing it. You can fix the problem. Getting that into WordPress core and getting it out the other side can often, it might take years, depending on whether if it was somebody's particular project or if it's not a focus. It could take a very long time, and we just end up with people just not wanting to go that route. So to counter that, so we have momentum, we end up with sponsoring people and saying, well, okay, let's have people who are working on WordPress core permanently, and companies who have nitpicks can then say, you know, I'm going to sponsor someone and hope that I can through them get my thing through. So it's a slightly different model and setup, and they've got pros and cons to both, but
yeah,
obviously from my side, being that sort of altruistic route that Drupal goes down, and I look at that quite often and go, I wish we had more of that.
Yeah. Because everything that you just said, it's just passing through my head that first time. And it sounds like, just the way that my head's grabbing it, it sounds like that altruistic model, that kind of feedback loop that you get of you do some work, so you get some recognition, so you do more work, so you get more recognition. On the face of it, that sounds brilliant, doesn't it? But then if you play that, you can imagine like 2 or 3 years in, you might have this like inner circle of people who do all the work and so get all the new work, and so they do all.
And there also is a part of it that you've got to surface what work needs to get done.
Right.
So you can just have people turn up and go, I found a spoon, I want to fix the spoon. You basically need the spoons that need to be fixed highlighted. Wow, that's a weird analogy, but
I like it.
But I'm sure we can break it. But that. the answer.
So I know this guy who had a spoon.
The thing is with all these models is they have to adapt depending on the community that they're with. So contribution models. So if we were to adapt completely the Drupal model, it wouldn't work for us because we are a different community. And that is absolutely amazing. But it means that we look at all these different... So spoiler, contribution models are kind of something that I'm really curious about. But it's not just looking at Drupal. Like Linux... this giant projects, we have a lot to learn from those. They've been for a long time sustaining some really complex systems as well. They have very different models. Software has very different models as well. So many different types of open source have been done, but a lot of it comes down to highlighting the projects. So a lot of contributors that we have now who are doing sponsorship, for example, they are going in areas that need it in the project because they've been around for such a long time and they identify that those areas need it because either they're core committers or they just know. But that doesn't scale for newer people who are coming. So it's about highlighting those areas. And then there's lots of like system things that need to be done as well. So the answer is it's not that easy, but the answer is we are slowly as a project going to be having to do all of this to change. It's all very well and good having rules and regulations on how to behave, but we also need a system in place for how to also fix our plumbing as well.
I have some thoughts on this. So one of the things that came out of what Chris said was that, and again, if memory serves, I think that Acquia, and I could be wrong, but I think it's Acquia, so think automatic. I think he said that they decide what the goals might be. And so when somebody comes in, it's very clear to sort of signpost them to, look, if you've got hours, that's the thing that we need handling to drive the project forward. So I thought that was curious. Yeah. The other thing which is curious is they just don't face this 43% of the web problem, this just massive user base. I mean, it's much more, you know, the numbers are just significantly less. So there's you know, you put 1,000 people in a room, there'll be 1,000 different talking points. You put 1,000,000 people in a room, there'll be 1,000,000. And, you know, it's that, basically. But the other thing is, you mentioned the Linux Foundation and the success that they've had. I really don't know anything about that, and I'm going to make a few points which could be just massively incorrect. It feels like the Linux user base is probably fairly technical and driven in a certain direction, whereas the WordPress user base, it feels like there's just real non-technical pit, and I'm getting shaking of the head.
So the reason I'm shaking my head is I actually started out back in the day on aging myself, IRC. But that was like, I was dabbling in this kind of like computery stuff, and I was really curious, and I did IRC support for Linux. And that was like one of my first exposures to community, good or bad, but that was one of my first exposures to a lot of this. And they're not considered technical. They wouldn't be considered that way. They get very technical very quickly, people who are in there, but it's generally either people who can't afford systems back in the day, I'm also talking quite historic, bear in mind, but also people who are maybe in spaces where they have Linux boxes, which they have more access to. Right. And Tim was also shaking his head, so I feel a bit backed up here.
Fair play.
I was going to say, if you think of the Linux desktop and the Linux server as completely different things. So when you're thinking about server infrastructure, so like things that are powering websites, water sensors, all of that stuff, that's technical and geeky. When you think of the Linux desktop, there is like a branch of it that's super geeky. If you're an Arch user or a Nix user, they're the sort of people who feel that they have to come out and tell you about it. And we'll tell you in immense detail. But the vast majority of the Linux desktop ecosystem are Chromebooks.
Interesting.
And they're in schools.
Yeah.
They're low-cost, low-performing computers that are in all sorts of places. But also, your Android device is a Linux system. That is the least techy bunch of people. Everybody who has a phone who's got an Android is running a Linux system on there. It's in devices, it's all over the place. So it's not really fair to say that the people using it aren't technical. But there is something to be said that the Linux Foundation, the people who are interested in the governance side of it,
might be
slightly more technical. There is also a lot more corporate, a larger corporate corporates behind some of the aspects of the Linux Foundation. It really does get...
And it also depends which distribution you're talking about.
Okay.
And which area you're in. So I've moved around in different Linux. I'm not involved anymore in the Linux community. One community is enough for me. So often I head into two. And then I just took up all once. I do not have the bandwidth. For good example, I was involved in SUSE Linux back in the day. And that had a very different governance model to other governance. So that is kind of the idea. One community does not fit and one governance model does not generally fit. Yes, there are this underpinning of open source, this underpinning principles throughout everything, but everybody should learn from everybody and distill down to what works and is fair for everybody in that system and works for the businesses and products to thrive in that system. And I think that's the tangent, what grows businesses and products in our system and what doesn't. So what Drupal does grows products in this, in their system, but what it grows it in our system is going to be completely different.
Just on the Drupal front, watch this space. They've got this really interesting thing called Drupal CMS, which they've just launched, mm-hmm. which I think is quite fascinating. If I won't go into it, but it's just a different take on their platform, made easier, let's just say that. So a couple of comments. First thing, Attacko misheard what you said when you said we need more live bands. And he heard bands, like B-A-N-S. He was like, no, not more. But yeah, we do need more live bands. And then Nomad Skateboarding. We had this conversation about badges, Drupal recognition at the community summit. So here's the problem encapsulated perfectly. Half wanted more rewards, half saw wanting recognition as opposed to the spirit of contributing. So there, in a nutshell, is the problem. Half the community want one thing, half maybe don't. So, okay. Let's see what else he's got to say. Based on profession, almost 40% of Linux users are software developers, followed by administrators or IT professionals. 30% and students learning technology-related subjects is 15%. And I guess...
I'm not sure where those statistics came from. But
yeah, tell us. Tell us a bit,
yeah, I'd be curious because, Chromebooks outsell a lot of computers to the point that they're currently outselling a lot of the Windows PCs. At the moment.
Wow.
And the Steam Deck is one of the fastest selling gaming console devices, and again is a full Linux system on
and
there.
And it is so hackable. It is so fun to hack as well.
You love all that new emulator
stuff. Oh. So good.
Are you the kind of person that when you get a device, you just get the screwdriver out straight away? It's like, what the heck?
No, I don't
here?
Get a screwdriver. I go into the software. No, I don't have a screwdriver anymore. It's bad.
Okay, I feel that we've probably done that one. So let's move on to something else. We're going to miss out a bunch of stories because we...
One quick thing.
Of course.
How do we actually know about, you know, half the people maybe want this or half the people not, but how do we know? When do we have a referendum or a vote?
Yeah.
We don't know, basically. You can't say.
Referendums don't go well in my book.
Yeah, don't talk about referendums.
Can we not have one? Oh, don't. No, of course not.
Totally upended the whole... Oh, we're all in a bad mood now.
Trauma.
Sorry, as a European passport.
Okay. So there's
no platform. Yeah. Platform where to express. Anyway, carry on.
Okay, thank you. Okay, you've drawn out.
So to answer
maybe...
your question though, normally what would happen? I think the fact from that is no proposal was made from the community summit. What generally will happen is a proposal will happen on the Mate blog, and then decision will happen. So what will happen with a lot of this stuff is proposals will be made, and then voices will be added, and then a decision will be made.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the next thing, this is going to cheer you right up, all the listeners. So I'm going to skip a few bits because we're definitely going to run out of time if we don't. On the face of it, this sounds really good. I'm just going to read the headline. Again, it's the repository, so it's reporting from Ray. WordPress.org plugin submissions surge 87%. And then if you get that far into the title, you're thinking, oh, great. Everything's going big guns for WordPress. Then you finish the title. Surge 87% amid rise in AI tools. Now, who could have seen this one coming? Almost everybody. This, on the face of it, it sounds great, right? Loads of new plugins. It's democratized, blah, 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 blah. But I guess there's a flip side to this, and Ray's trying to draw that out a little bit. So obviously, a surge in plugins is brilliant. But if those plugins are being turned around with, you know, a credible sounding title, and it goes to the .org repo, and it turns out that somebody has just made a piece of software that AI. Now, obviously, I'm making sort of various assumptions. I'm going to use the use case of somebody like me who is not capable at coding a WordPress plugin. But if I was to manage to put that together with an AI and submit it to the repository, I then, I guess, join the queue like everybody else. But I'm not sure that my submission probably deserves its place in that queue. And again, I'm definitely treading on some landmines here. But you see what I mean? After the submission process had been gone through and my, you know, my plugin was deemed to have this error and that error, and it was clearly done by AI, at that point, you could say maybe you didn't deserve your place in the queue, if you know what I mean. And the problem appears to be that there is this surge, and it's therefore consuming quite a bit of time. And the concern is also that inexperienced developers, again, I'll use me as an example, if it gets rejected, and then all I do is then go and ask the AI to fix the problems that the team have said need fixing, and then I just resubmit it, maybe there's a little bit of danger here of consuming up time that in the past we didn't need to worry about. So on the face of it, 87% surge sounds good. On the negative side, maybe we're just going to have this deluge of plugins that really aren't up to snuff. I don't know what we think about that. It's just kind of
the creepy. Reality is, yes, you can sit down and you can make endless amounts of plugins in a weekend. You writing a prompt saying use the create block plugin as a whatever, using your cursor rules, and set it up, and you can way above what you could create in your dreams, and I do it, but I'm not going to put them into the repo. And I think this is up to the individual what they put into the repo. For me, if I was going to put something into the repository, that would be something I was going to maintain and something that I thought was going to be useful to more than just my, I'm just wonder what happens if I just poke this bit and see what happens in AI, which is generally what I'm doing when I'm just trying to experiment. And I did like way too many over the weekend, making into blocks and just seeing what could happen. I'm not sending them in, but the thing is, some of them have JavaScripts and they have security. I'm not going to send them in because I don't know the implications from security, from performance. And yes, I can run the check plugin, and yes, all of them do pass the check plugin, but that still does not mean I'm going to send them in, because what passes today does not mean it's going to pass tomorrow, because I don't know what every line of code does. And I can learn what every line of code does. That's the whole point about my experiments and what I'm learning. But it is not necessarily a good thing to have lots, but it's good that people are experimenting. So I think it's a fine line between the amount, but if you cannot respond to it without AI, you probably need to kind of have a bit of a check about sending something, because you can't support it without AI. That's maybe where it becomes a problem.
Yeah, I think we're not in a unique space, are we? I mean, flooding the landscape with stuff is just the reality in the year 2025. AI is flooding all landscapes with stuff. And
AI isn't flooding landscapes with stuff. I'm going to do humans are flooding with AI. And I think that's the correction. Okay. AI isn't just doing it. No. We are being the obnoxious rubbish makers.
This
is the thing, we are making the rubbish. We're telling AI to make the rubbish, not AI making the rubbish.
But anyway, the problem I think is one of, like, you know, hours boots on the ground, if you know what I mean. And obviously the team a few years ago, well, actually not that long ago, maybe 18 months ago, we had this whole kind of 90-day waiting period, and there were 1,000+ plugins, and a lot of automation got driven into that system. And now we're down to, well, we were down to a week wait and basically nothing in the queue. So you were waiting for people to immediately hop onto it. It would be a shame if this just, you know, if 10,000 start to go in a week. And
it's a bigger problem than that. If you have 70 plugins that do the same thing, how do you know which plugin is actually going to be any good? Because they all have beautiful pictures. They all look like they do the same thing. And then we're back to the, you have to try every single one on. And that is also the problem. And it's not that we shouldn't have variety, because we absolutely should. And experiments are amazing and plugins are amazing. And I want more blocks and I want more experiments, but I want ones that have been carefully thought out and planned, not ones that have just been put up just because I didn't know. And I just wanted to like put a stake in the ground.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, thoughtful ones.
Yeah.
I think, and I'm not assuming that no one's thinking, but.
Yeah, well, an 87% increase is that's quite a jump, isn't it? You've got to imagine that.
Isn't fair? Maybe a couple of them weren't as thoughtful as they should be.
Yeah,
like.
There you go. I don't know what the problem is. It seems like a society-wide problem. Definitely not limited.
I think you know the phrase "a puppy's not for Christmas." Well, yeah. A plugin submission to WordPress.org isn't for Christmas either.
No, I don't know what that means, but I like it. It sounds good.
It means that you're responsible for it.
Okay.
The second you put it in, and there is a difference between I'm going to shove this up on GitHub with a note that says use it, don't use it, I don't care. If you raise an issue, I might go and look at it. There is an assumption, and it's a wrong assumption, but bearing in mind that WordPress.org is a very visible distribution of a polished thing to end users. Someone goes onto my GitHub and finds one of my plugins. Well, the contract's sort of on. There isn't like a social contract between me and them. They're taking some code. They're getting what they're getting. They raise an issue. They know how that goes. I might respond. I might not. But on WordPress.org, there's an assumption from an end user that this thing has gone through some rigorous testing, which, I'll be honest, it hasn't gone through rigorous testing. It's gone through a plugin review. There is a huge misunderstanding and think that it's gone through a manual code review. The plugins aren't going through manual code reviews. They are going through cursory reviews, get the main gotchas, pass through. But you are responsible then, and it's going on other people's sites. So do you want to be the person who took down somebody's site because of a bug you put in? Now, you could be the sort of person who says, well, I don't care. Then probably submitting to WordPress.org isn't for you. If you want a shiny badge on WordPress.org, there are other ways to get the shiny badges. But if you do care, then you've got to think about, okay, I have to go through far more than what my AI just told me. I've got to think about things, much more wider things. And AI might be writing the code, but it's not thinking about necessarily long-term maintenance practices. It's not thinking about the fact that every WordPress release, you're going to have to retest it. It's not building a test bed for you to do this. It's not putting all this extra time in. So a WordPress plugin on WordPress.org is not just a responsibility, but it's a bunch of work. So you've got to decide whether or not you actually want to do that work. And for some people, they want to contribute back through their plugin, and that's fantastic. For some people, it's a means to promote their other thing. For some people, it is literally just a wrapper to their paid service and guru at them, because that's very frustrating if you find the perfect plugin to find that it's a SaaS product hidden wrapped in there. But in all of these cases, they've got a valid use case. If you're putting it up there because it's a good place to store code, don't do that. Put it on GitHub or GitLab or your Git instance somewhere else.
Can I respond to the comment that says about using AI for code? Because I use AI for code. And I'm not at all saying that. I love using AI for code. It's about the final product that you release. And I think that's the thing. Like, I will use digital art. I will use AI for code. I actually use AI for my art as well. And I'm more than happy in doing that. But it's about what I release. I still test the thing that I release. I don't just like go, Cursor did it good enough. Windsurf did it good enough. And I use both. I am also running it through usability testing and running it through tests at the end. And I've got tests set up for my code as well. And I have regression testing set up to make sure that I don't do oopsies on my sites. You still have testing and you still have things put in, even if the code is from AI. Doesn't mean it's magically better because AI did it. It's just helping me. Like, I'm a dyslexic and I use Grammarly. Grammarly helps me to be able to do grammar. AI helps me to be able to do code. Doesn't mean that it's any different. It's a tool that I'm using to enable me.
I'll just read the entire comment. So Fat Jay, Thank you. Totally disagree. I don't know at what point that dropped in, so I don't know the specifics of what the disagreement is. But anyway, it's like saying you can't use a PC for art without drawing by hand. Claiming coding with AI... Oh, it's just jumped on my screen. Claiming coding with AI isn't valid is like saying years ago you couldn't use Illustrator unless you hand drew, but I understand the other problems. Yeah, for me, all of those points are kind of mute. It's moot, rather. It's more about the flooding the landscape problem. Like if we have a system like AI, if AI is able to, I don't know, let's just imagine a crazy scenario. Let's just imagine that at some point we are getting 100,000 WordPress plugin submissions a week to the repository. Then that repository is totally unusable from the point of view of new submissions. You can't wade through that. And there's that. I can imagine that's possible if somebody set their mind to it. I imagine that you know, if a bunch of people did it, it probably is possible to do that. So that's the problem that I'm worried about. And if there is a spike because of AI coding, I don't know what guardrails you put up to prevent that happening. You know, I'm going to use another analogy, dreadful though it will end up being, I'm sure. In order to get to see the doctor in the UK, you know, if you want to go to the hospital, there are certain things that you have to do to get through the door. You can't just sort of rock up in most cases and see a surgeon. You have to go through testing and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know if we have to have something like that. This might not be a problem. Maybe by this time next week, this will have gone away and it'll have gone down 87%. But it kind of feels like it's only going to go north of here. So, yeah, let's... Is there any other things, Peter? Did you want to chip in?
I replied there just because I do see the point and also agree completely with Tammy. But also, it is true. You totally can be, you know, use Illustrator and do computer art without sketching. But it's going to be, you know, you would be much better if you did sketch and it would be much easier as well. So I just, you know, I understand that much better than the coding. So I just felt like I had to say it.
I think I found the whole AI thing quite entertaining in the years 2022, 23 and 24. And now there are bits of it which are really starting to worry me, not about the outputs or anything like that. It is just this flooding the landscape thing. That part of it is starting to bother me a little bit.
The human bit, not the AI though.
Completely.
Well, possibly.
True. That's what we do.
I guess
that's
it's the scale do. At which it enables humans to do things.
If you go back 25 years, PHP was just starting off on the scene. Well, it's been around for a little bit before that. You had like CMSs like PHP Nuke, which were very simplistic. And people started hacking around and coding them. And then so suddenly you had Typo3 coming along. And then you had Drupal coming along. And then there was this explosions of everybody building their own CMSs and playing. And so the programming languages got more fancy and more things got put in, and the web could start doing things. So then Macromedia Flash was sort of around and everybody was downloading these things, and then Java applets appeared and it was a complete and utter mess. And we went, no, we don't want all this, wiped it all back. Now we live in a world with JavaScript and CSS and they can do amazing and powerful things. These waves and things that happen all the way through, you give humans a bunch of tools, they're going to use it.
Yeah.
You give them AI, yeah, they're going to use it.
I guess
and we shouldn't stop that.
No, I suppose at the base, what I'm thinking is there won't be enough people to consume the stuff that's put out. And I guess at that point, it somehow gets redressed, because, you know, what would be the point in making 10,000 plugins if you discover at the end of that enterprise that nobody's downloaded even one of them ever? You would then rethink, wouldn't you? You'd be like, well, I'm not doing that silliness again. So I suppose there's some redressing. And I think that we're just in that moment of AI is such entertaining fun. You know, it would appear that just during the last week, stuff that came out of Google I.O., is really credible now, really, really credible at making video. So video has taken a real upswing in just the last month or 2 months. And so, you know, will we be inundated with a load of videos that nobody can watch? Probably. But will people who are making videos probably rein in their expectations of what humanity as a whole can consume? Yeah, certainly, because you're not going to keep making videos if nobody's watching them. But we haven't. We're at the point where it's just too exciting not to play.
It's also a human thing, right? Like, one, we kind of make messy stuff to move forward. And yeah. We make a lot of messy stuff to move forward, right? Like, even back in, like, prehistoric day, we made things out of mud to move forward. And that's what we do. Like, as Tim, you were saying, like, anything we got around us, we, like, try and shape it into things to try and find the limits of the space and the tools that we have. That's what we've done. And then that's how we push, like, in the physical and in the the problem is we just have, like, we're in the digital space. So if you're not in this digital space, you wouldn't see all this AI stuff piling up around you. Like, we're in the space where we're just seeing it all pile up around us all the time. Oh, and okay. We're, like, seeing, yeah, like, the sheer mountains of it. Unless you're, like, turning into it, then you're not. But what we probably have to do is tune into the good and the bad of it. And we probably have to have more filters. Like, before, you were just paying attention to all AI. Right now, maybe refine that a little bit, because all AI will be a bit much for you. Yeah. So try and, like, yeah, that's kind of it.
I get you. That makes sense.
I watch a YouTube channel that does, like, the AI news. And I remember a year ago, his YouTube videos were 10 minutes long and came out once a week. They now are 45 minutes to an hour long and come three times a week.
Oh.
I've stopped watching his YouTube channel.
Right. Flooding the landscape, right?
Subscribed, but honestly, I can't keep up with it. So I might dip in and out. But I think that really demonstrates the exponential growth in tools and things. And a lot of these tools are built on other models underneath, and you can often run down. But it's going to grow. It's going to get wilder, and we're going to get more plugins. But that doesn't stop humans from having responsibility for the actions that they take. And if we grind that conversation right the way back to all of these plugins were being put in, I'm not worried about the people generating the plugins. I'm wondering, why did they submit them? What did they want?
Right.
What did they want from that? And How can we maybe better help them if that wasn't if they were putting it there because they just wanted a space to upload their plugin for some reason? Maybe we need better education on other tooling in other places, because maybe the plugin repository wasn't the right place, or maybe people genuinely think they do want to put these things on because they're feeling empowered by the AI tools, which is fantastic. Because one of the best things and worst things about WordPress is that I do code reviews for a living, and I've reviewed code from a literal priest, a surgeon, and professional developers. The priest and the surgeon are quite often have the nicer and better code. It's certainly the more secure code than the development company ever will. So the fact that the AI can allow anybody to code even is a positive thing. We just need to encourage them down the right path.
And that's a good point. I hope that in this, if anything happens that prevents stuff going in, like, someone wouldn't get off put. Like, imagine someone's always had this idea for something. And that's something that I found with AI. Like, I had these ideas that have been buzzing around my head, and I can finally make them real. Right? That's amazing. And if someone did that and they did it with good intent and they finally managed to get this idea that's been bouncing around their head for such a long time, and it's the start of maybe they're a single parent and they think this is the start of a business and that was what they were doing or something like that, and they were like, oh my goodness, I'm going to put on the repo and I'm going to finally do something. I don't want that to get lost in all, along with the priest and the doctor and the candlestick maker and the shoe, whatever. Like, I don't want that to get lost with all of these are bad, because that's not they're not bad. There's just a lot of noise. And what we've got to do is work out what's going to get maintained, what's going to be noise for users, what's going to be good noise or bad noise, and lots of honky noises at the same time.
That was so hysterical. That was just so priceless. You were saying, talking about there being lots of noise and there was just this honky noise in the background. I have a gripe, though. I mean, honestly, it's not fair, is it? The priest, he's got a direct line to the creator. definitely going to write good code.
Which is AI at this point.
Yeah, exactly. But also, it's not anything that we need to worry about because, you know, there's going to be environmental collapse before we have to worry about peaches.
And that's when we realized it's prompts.
By the way. suddenly it all got very dark. Okay.
It's true, though, that the passive use of AI is definitely, you know, having a serious impact on climate change and sustainable. It's not sustainable. That's true. All those memes that people create because someone did something very silly with, you know, ChatGPT. And it's like burning. It's like, let's burn a few miles of forest. Anyway, sorry.
It's also a practical thing. If you're, WordPress.org has not infinite amounts of disk space. I mean, they are backed onto large infrastructure provider, but still, if we're storing all this code that's literally never going to be downloaded by anybody, including the author, ever again, should it really be there? Does it need to be in the cloud? Does it need an SVN repo? Does it need all the bits? Does it need a forum space? Does it need all that? So there are other things beyond just the generation as well that it's worth thinking sustainably about.
A lot of that stuff has I don't remember how many years, how many versions that it becomes you get that yellow message and saying it's out of date.
Yeah.
And then maybe we can say they get cutoffs, but we shouldn't have to wait to those.
Do you know, this is a problem that I think about quite a lot because I do wonder at what point, no matter how clever our technology gets and our storage shrinks, that is to say, you know, the amount of storage we can fit in a physical space increases so that the space required shrinks, the amount of space available expands. I do often think, how long can we keep doing it on Earth until we've used up all the available resources just to store stuff like YouTube videos? Because YouTube's mental, apparently, and I'm just going to make up a statistic, but it's adjacent to this. It's something like every minute, a day's worth of video is uploaded. And it might even be less than that. You know, it might be every 10 seconds or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But the point is, there's this extraordinary running away with technology. And I do often wonder, at what point do we have to say, we got no more space? Sorry, there's no more new internet. You've just got the archive.org. That's all we got left. And I don't know when that point will be, but maybe AI will allow us to reach it ever so soon. So on that bombshell, let's move on. If you were confused, God, this is going to sound so banal now. We've had such an interesting philosophical discussion. We're back to blocks and rows and columns and things. I just thought I'd raise this one because if, like me, you are really mightily confused by what rows, groups, and columns and things like that do in the native block editor, not with your suite of plugins, I just thought this was a really nice article. I saw it this week. It's Ask Design Blog, and they've got a piece called Layout and look at that. You highlight it, and the title just completely disappears. That's interesting. It's called Layout and Design with Rows and Stack Blocks, and it's just a little tutorial with helpful illustrations as to what will happen if you arrange things. And I really could have done this because I had my intuitions, and I got my hardware hammer out. Let's just put it that way. Have any of you got a hardware hammer? You all need a hardware hammer. It's a small hammer. You hold it in your hand and it's made basically of the most compressible foam in the world. And when you get really frustrated with your hardware, you can just beat the living daylights out of it and it does no, you can't. Tim, hang on. Let's zoom into that.
I've literally got a jar full of squishy things.
So what's that hacky set? You just throw that at the machine, do you?
It's a softball thing that it's like you get squeezed to the point of it.
It's nowhere near the joy of the hardware hammer. Yeah. Do you remember? So this goes to Tammy and Tim. Sorry, Peacher, this probably won't land with you. Do you remember Mallet's Mallet when you were a kid? Yeah. Tim's nodding. Yeah.
Timmy Mallet.
It's a bit like that, my hardware hammer.
As somebody who shares his name, you can imagine the sort of things I know.
he was not somebody you wanted to be associated with. Anyway, go and check it out if you're confused.
You should be glad you don't know that reference. It's just not good.
The Timmy Mallet one. Okay, yeah, thank you. It's really features of the word. Google it, and you'll see the most brightly coloured, overly happy individual. Yeah, yeah, yeah. wonder what happened to Timmy Mallet. Now there's a sentence.
I think your face just showed you Googled.
I mean, is it worse than the Magic Roundabout?
It's not what? As good.
Oh, the Magic Roundabout is fantastic.
I know, it's fantastic, but it was totally fantastic. It was clearly done by people on acid, so it sounds like...
No, it was less drugs.
Timmy Mallet, I've got it here. Yeah, okay, no, I think that's fantastic.
Okay, there you go. We've settled that. Well, in an interesting twist, we ended up talking about 1980s TV shows for children in the UK. There you go. So go and check that article out. I'll link to it in the show notes. Honestly, I think that's probably all we've got time for. I was going to show you some exciting new things that I caught sight of in the block space. I'll just show them quickly. This just gives an illustration, for me at least anyway, why I think blocks are just such an exciting thing, that although everybody's using them, blah, 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 I do think there's a lot of runway still. Here you go. Just a few things that dropped this week. A new photo block that allows you to manipulate your photos in new and interesting ways. A parallax image block with effects. What else have we got? We've got a better navigation, which the panel didn't seem to think was probably all that.
This is a discussion for when is a block useful and when is a block not. And we don't know. We haven't tried it. Right? I think initially when you were sharing this, you were saying... what it did is just add styling. And for us, we could add styling. But I think that's the thing, like knowing the use case. So when people say the description, something that really to say, if you're solving a use case, say in your description that you're solving a particular use case for this and why you're solving it as well will really help people.
This one, it just marks itself as, this plugin is ideal for users who want a quick and effective solution to enhance their site's mobile navigation without delving into custom CSS. So it's definitely not for the panel here, who probably love playing with CSS and things like that. Anyway, there's that. And then there was also this a new one, Ghost Lab Cycle Block Light. It just allows you to show a randomized block. So it could be an ad or who knows, whatever. But it just gives me an intuition that blocks, they're sort of the new hotness and probably will be for the next period of time. They hopefully weren't created by AI, or at least they've got human names. Yeah, that'll be the tell, won't it? If the plugin is created by xy4.ph3, then you know that it isn't a human. That's it. Anything else you guys want to say before we knock it on the head? Crickets. So no, I guess that truly is it. In which case, I will bid all of our panel adieu. Thank you very much to Tim Nash. Thank you, Tim, especially, for stepping in at the 11th hour. Michelle, if you've been watching this, I don't know if you have or not, but if you have, I hope you're starting to feel better soon. Go and listen to Tim's intro at the beginning. It was nice. Peacher Neri, thank you very much for joining us. You can go and check out Michelle with Peacher. Post status, happening when again?
First episode will be on the 12th of June. It's the weekend after WordCamp Europe, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I will link to whatever I can find. If you've got a link to that, Peacher, will you drop it into our shared
show? As soon as I have it, I absolutely will.
If you don't, then that's fine. Thank you. Definitely. And of course, finally, thank you to Tammy Lister for joining us as well from Gildenburg. You can go and check that out. And thank you to you, dear listener, for sticking with us right to the very end. Really appreciate it. We should, I think, is there a reason we wouldn't be back next week? Is it WordCamp Europe next? Yeah. So it won't be here next week. I'm going to be in Basel, Switzerland. So we won't be having a show next week, but hopefully we'll have one the week after that. He said, hoping that that's actually going to happen. Thank you to you three. Thanks to our audience for watching this week. Panel, if you want to stick around and have a little bit of a natter after, I'd appreciate that. That'd be nice. But we'll see you next time.
You're going to do your hands.
Oh, sorry. We've got to do the hands. Let's do that.
Well, no, we don't have to.
No, we do. No, we really don't have to.
Tim, glad to remind him.
Oh, you're brilliant. You've got to do the hands. Thank you so much. And we will see you next time. Take it easy. Bye.